All right, what's up, everybody?
Hey, that's the first time in a little in a minute that you guys haven't required like a do-over, right? You guys usually I give you a mulligan and you find we're making progress. This is good. Hey, so we're so thankful you guys are here with us. We obviously baptism is something that matters so much to us as a church. We celebrate life change. Now, if you're kind of curious as to what we believe in baptism is not an act of salvation. Like it is a symbolic expression of what we're not doing this again. Me and this microphone have had beef for the last 2 weeks. So it is a symbolic expression of what God is doing in your life. So the way that we say it, it's an outward expression of an inward condition. God is working on you. Does that mean you're perfect? Absolutely not, right? But you are making progress. You're on the journey. You're on the path. And that's what we believe that baptism is. So we love it. We celebrate life change. We celebrate baptism. Today, we're kicking off a series called Loser. Now, this is where it gets, why are you so excited about that? All right. So I don't know about you. I don't know where you're at. I don't know what your level of competitiveness is. Mine is sinful. I mean, borderline. I do not like to lose. I don't like to lose. In fact, I have debated. This is a sincere like conversation that I've had in my head. Do I need to give up sports? It's a question that I've asked myself. I'm like, because most of the frustration in my life, like most of the times when I look back on my life and I was like, and I realized, man, I was wrong, is usually found in kind of the context of sports when somebody said something or did something and then I retaliated and said something or did something, right? It's just for whatever reason, the competitive juices, here's what I'm getting at. I don't like to lose. I hate losing. I hate losing. Losing is awful. It sucks. I hate it. I like to win. I want to win, Stephen. For those of you that know Nacho Libre, the great theologian. I want to win, right? It sucks to be me right now. So anyway, I don't like to lose. I don't like to lose. And I think what happens with this is in Christianity, You couple the fact that we don't like to lose with the truth that we serve an all-powerful God, I think that it can create some misperceptions about life, like that maybe we're not supposed to lose ever, right? Has anybody else ever struggled with this? Like, well, you know, I hate to lose. God obviously made me that way. God is capable of doing anything. I believe in his capability. I believe in his power. And so if I don't like to lose and he made me that way and God is able to do anything, then maybe I'm not supposed to lose ever. Am I the only one that has ever thought like this? I think a lot of people think like this because if they didn't think like this, then why when you lose do you freak out? Right? Why then, when things don't go your way, do you throw a hissy fit? Do you have a pity party, right? Why then, when you experience a season of loss, do you kind of start to question, like, God, where are you at? What are you doing? Why would you do this to me? It's because we think that we're not supposed to lose. But what I believe is that if you look at Scripture, you look at the words of Jesus, you look at the life of Jesus, you realize that losing is part of the journey. Losing is something that happens to all of us, and it's supposed to happen to all of us. Now, do we win? Absolutely. Do we lose? Yes. Here's what losing does. Losing makes winning better. I'm going to say it one more time for the people in the back, right? Losing makes winning better. Like, if you won all of, like, how many of you, let's be honest, football fans? Got a few? One or two? One or ten? How many of you are not football fans? There are other churches. Just kidding. I'm kidding. I'm absolutely kidding. We're so glad you're here. I can't imagine what you're doing with your life, but I'm so glad that you are here. So we, football fans, you maybe this will resonate with you. How many of you are just absolutely sick and tired of hearing about the New England Patriots? Right? And here's why. Because they just win all of the time. And every year we say, oh, man, we just want to see some new teams. We want to see some new matchups. And we want something new because you guys just win all of the time. So when you lose, we love the worst to first stories, right? We love the teams that were losers. And then they turn it around and they start to win because they were losing. Losing helps us to appreciate winning. Losing is part of our story. And so that's kind of what we're going to look at in this series, that, hey, first off, it is something that we should not only experience, but it's also something that we should embrace. Not only should you experience loss, but you should also embrace loss. And that's very difficult to do, right? Now, I don't mean by this that you take on the mentality of a loser, right? That's not what we're saying at all, right? There's a mentality and there's an experience, right? Those are two totally different things. That's like you can be broke or you can be poor. One is a state of being. The other is a state of mind. Y'all see the difference, right? So it's okay to be in the state of being of losing, but do not be in the state of mind of a loser, right? We are still called by God to purpose and great things. And so we're not losers in that sense, but we do experience loss. All of that was like an intro for the series, so you guys just better get ready, right? Better get ready. Here's one other thing about losing that I think is really important to point out. Losing is probably one of the most powerful teachers you'll ever experience in your life. Because when you lose, this is what we tend to do. When you lose, you tend to be more introspective. Y'all know when things are going good? Like, well, yeah, I got this. I did that. Come on, man, y'all ain't being honest right now. When things are going good, we don't take any time to figure out why things are going good. We just enjoy the fact that things are going good. When things go wrong, when we start to lose, we're like, why is every, and we micro, like with a microscope, with a fine-tooth comb, we go back over every aspect and element of our life and try to figure out why it is that we're losing. We tend to be more introspective. We take the time to learn about ourselves and what God is trying to do in those moments and those seasons. And because we do that, losing is a tremendous teacher. It teaches us. Winning is awesome, but we don't learn as much from winning as we do losing. So we're going to kick off the series today by looking at one of the things that Jesus said about losing, and it's probably the most important thing that we'll ever talk about with respect to losing, so you don't have to come the next 3 weeks. I'm kidding. That's a joke, because listen, statistically, some of y'all gonna do that. Don't do that, right? Come every week. I was talking to a friend of mine. This is off subject. I was talking to a friend of mine the other day. It's been a little while back. And he's like, you know, I don't know that I necessarily like feel the need to go to church every week. And I'm like, why? I breathe every week. I eat every week. I eat a lot. If I went to church as much as I ate, your boy would be spiritual, right? And so the mentality was that, well, I just don't necessarily get something out of church every time that I go. Now, I have two issues with that. The first one is that I'm the pastor, and I get something out of it every time that I come, like every time. And it's not necessarily like, oh, that message was so good. See, a lot of times y'all think I'm preaching. Some of you guys will do this. You'll be like, oh, Pastor, you was preaching to me today. I was like, no, I was preaching to me. I'll just share it with you. Right, that was for me, and you just got to partake in right, the meal. And so I think what happens a lot of times is we think that we don't get something out of it, but the question that I have is, like, what did you put into it? Did you come in with any kind of expectancy? Did you come in with a hard heart, not willing to listen to what it is that God wanted to say to you or do in your life? And if you come like that, then you're never going to get anything out of church, right? And so, but if you come with a different mentality, you come with an attitude of expectation that God is going to do something in your life, then you probably will get something out of it. And even if you don't, we don't come to church. See, this is the mentality that we have about church. We have this consumerism, slot machine God mentality about church. I'm going to put something in, so I got to get something out. Y'all didn't want to talk about this stuff today, did you? Right? I didn't even plan on talking about this stuff today, but we're going to. So we think sometimes that when we go to church, well, I've got to, you know, get something out of it. I've got to feel good about it. Sometimes you go for other people. you go so that, that not only do you get blessed, but you can also be a blessing. You have no idea. You have no idea the capability you have to inspire other people. You don't know what they're going through and what your story might mean to them. So we don't always go for our own. I don't even know why we started talking about that stuff. All right. So the point is, we're going to do the series for the next few weeks. It would be awesome if you came. Right? Jesus on losing. Our first point, Jesus on losing. This is what Jesus said about losing. And Jesus, he said things a lot of times that were kind of like head scratchers. Have you ever talked to somebody who was just a little smarter than you? And then when they said something, this is what I do. I don't know how you handle this. I'm just like, yeah. And I'm like, what the heck was he saying? Right? And I'm like, you know, you and then like 30 seconds later, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, I get it. Y'all don't, I guess everybody's on the same wavelength as you. Cool. So Jesus said a lot of things like that that were very deep. They were very almost counterintuitive. When you hear it, you're like, what? And then the more you start to think about it, you're like, right? Starts to make a little bit of sense. And so this is one of those hard statements that Jesus made about losing. In Matthew chapter 10, verses 38 and 39, it says this: whoever does not take up their cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Verse 39, whoever finds their life will lose it, and whoever loses their life for my sake will find it. Whoever doesn't take up their cross, one version of this says, whoever doesn't take up their cross daily and follow me is not worthy of me. And then he says this, it's kind of like this conundrum, right? Is it a dichotomy, right? So when you kind of do the comparison by contrast, if you find your life, you actually lose it. But if you lose your life for my sake, you actually find it. Clear? Now go and live in peace and be well and serve the Lord, right? Simple, very simple. It's not all that simple, right? It's one of those things that I think that you really have to take some time and try to process, to try to understand. And if you do, this is one of those verses that we probably are familiar with. If you've been in church any length of time, you've probably heard this verse. You know, he who finds his life loses it, he who loses his life finds it. Ah, good, Christianese. But what we do is we quickly move on from it, because if you take any time to start to try to understand that, then two things, right? One is effort, requires effort, and can we be honest? We are the laziest people the world may have ever known. It used to be that people would have to like find a flint rock and sharpen it into an arrow. And then they would chase down their meal for hours, possibly days, until they could kill an animal and cook it meat. Yeah. And now we're like, stupid Uber Eats isn't here yet. Am I right? They said 15 minutes, and it is 17 minutes. Bad review. This driver's awful. Fire him. What would our ancestors think? Just unbelievable. But we tend to be lazy. Let's be honest. If it's not easy, we don't necessarily like it. This is one of those statements that is not easy. This is one of those statements that requires effort, and it requires time to understand it. If you lose your life, you find it. But if you find your life, you lose it. And because it's hard, if you actually put the work in to start to try to comprehend it, then what happens, kind of the second layer to that, is you've got to do something with that. Right? You cannot read and understand a statement like that and not have it demand something from you. To lose your life is to find it. To find your life is to lose it. What are you going to do with that? What are we going to do with that? Like, what does that look like for us when we get up tomorrow morning and we go to work and we try to live our life? What does it mean to lose your life and to find it, and to find your life and lose it? You see the weight of this statement? It's one of those things that Jesus said that, again, it's a conundrum. It's very difficult to understand when you just hear it and kind of try to gloss over it and quickly move away from it. But if you start to try to digest it, process it, understand it for your own personal life, it requires something of you. And so we'll kind of dissect it today into two parts. The first one, he said to take up your cross and to follow him. And if you don't do that, you're not worthy of him. So take up your cross and follow me. What does that even mean? What does it mean to take up your cross? If you're not familiar with the cross, it's kind of like the ultimate symbol of losing. Because if you are on a cross, you're literally losing your life. It's a Roman torture device that they created to punish people who didn't play by their rules. And so you weren't winning by their rules, therefore you were losing, so you're going to hang on a cross, which is the ultimate symbol of losing. And Jesus said we have to take up our cross and follow him. What does that mean? I think this is what I think that means. And there are several ways that you can kind of, you know, go with this. I think there are two things. The first thing about that is that what we lay down is not nearly as important as what we pick up. Y'all know how this is how we treat, and I did the same thing. Like, I know when I was teetering, I would go to church with Shelly because she asked me to go and she was really hot. And I was like, I just thought it was a date, right? Are we dating at church? That's weird, but cool. But, you know, it's like there were so many things in my life that I didn't want to lose. I didn't want to give up. Things that I thought that I just couldn't live without. Has anybody else ever been there? And then on the other side of it, you're like, well, I mean, what am I actually gaining by going to church, by following Jesus, by losing these things that I want to hold on to? What is it that I actually gain? And what you'll find out, and you'll never find out until you do it, is that what you lay down is never as good as what you pick up. What you lose is never as good as what you gain. That man, I love this quote I heard one time. That man is no fool who gives up what he cannot lose to gain what he can't. Gives up what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. That man is no fool who gives up what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. And we don't know that until we take the steps to pick it up. And so that's the first part of it, is that what you pick up is always more important than what you lay down. But I think the other thing in here, when it talks about taking up your cross, the cross was Jesus's mission. That's why he came to the earth. It says that the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. Jesus gave his life on the cross for us. That was his purpose. And so when he took up his cross, he was taking up his purpose. When he tells us to take up our cross, what he's doing is he's telling us to take up our purpose. He has a reason for us to be here. Man, y'all know we get so kind of, I guess, disillusioned in life, and we tend, for whatever reason, we just get so bitter with everything that's going on, and we forget that God has a very specific purpose for us. Or worse, you start winning at the wrong things. We'll talk about that in a minute. Y'all ever seen, for example, in basketball, this is something you see happen every once in a while. A team will make a shot on the wrong goal. It is, you feel just so bad for the kid or people that do that. You're just like, first off, why did he get playing time, coach? Why are you going to put, I'm kidding. But you feel so bad because he won and he lost all at the same time, which is exactly what Jesus said in verse 39. He's like, hey, if you lose your life, you find it. But if you find your life, if you make a basket in the wrong goal, then you're actually losing. And so he said that whoever finds it will lose it, and whoever loses it for his sake will find it. And the warning in there for us is that, hey, we can get caught up, we can get lost in pursuing the wrong things. The most dangerous thing you can do, I'm not kidding, this is the most dangerous thing a follower of Jesus can do, is to win at the wrong things. Because this is what it does. You start to win at the wrong things, and you feel a sense of purpose because you're winning and you think you're supposed to win, but you're winning at the wrong things. You're not winning at the right things. You're not winning at the things that actually matter in life. I would dread the experience of waking up at the end of my life and realizing that I lived the whole thing pursuing the wrong things. And y'all know what we do. We immediately deflect, oh, yeah, man, other people, they would probably do this. People who don't know Jesus would probably do this. I know a lot of Christians who are pursuing, they're winning at the wrong things. Winning at the wrong things. You can get to the end of your life and have one by one set of rules or one set of standards all of your life, but you have left nothing behind for the people that you're leaving behind. You have left no sort of legacy. You haven't done the things that actually matter and make a difference. You've just kind of won for yourself. And so it's a dangerous, incredibly dangerous thing that you can do. And so this is what happens in Christianity. This is what happens in life, right? We start to win and we start to get like little accomplishments along the way. We're basically crack addicts. Let me explain. Especially, y'all know that social media has essentially ruined civilization. I don't know if you guys know that or not. I'm not bitter about it, but it's cool. Some of y'all, man, where are y'all at? That was supposed to be funny. You guys, too sensitive. I was talking to a friend of mine. Since we're all being sensitive, I'll just tell you, I'll just be really insensitive right now. And he was talking about a friend of his who got in trouble for saying some things that were like, I was like, he said what? And he got in trouble? That's stupid. That is a complete overreaction to what he said. Because first off, we never consider context. You could take any one of my sermons about Jesus and love, and you could take one thing and make me sound like the most horrible person on the face of the earth, right? That's what happens when we live in a soundbite generation. So I told him, and this was my response, and this is what I think we're dealing with today. This is the result of a participation trophy generation. Right? Where everybody deserves everything, but don't you dare criticize or correct me or discipline me, because you ain't about that life, right? You want to catch these hands? Listen, I'll let you catch my belt, boy. Just kidding. I'm kidding. And so when you start, where are we going with this? I don't know, but it obviously needed to be said, right? So what happens, we live in a world full of people who have a losing mentality because they won't allow people to correct them. And so you've got this participation trophy generation, and that really didn't even tie in, but it was good to say. So preach. I did. I would hate to wake up at the end of my life with a realization that I lived my life winning at the wrong things. And so let's look at a few of those things that we can do that we think are winning, or the world thinks is winning, the things that we celebrate in society that we might think are winning, but they're actually losing. So 1 John chapter 2, verse 16, it says this. It says, "For everything in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life comes not from the Father, but from the world." Right? This is, again, one of those really easy things. Like, oh, that's easy. Yeah, I've never struggled with the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, or the pride of life. I'm good. Said no one ever. Right? Said no one ever. So everything in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life comes not from the Father, but from the world. The New Living Translation, I love the way that it says this, and I wanted to do this for emphasis. 1 John 2:16, in the New Living Translation, it says this, "For the world offers only a craving for physical pleasure, a craving for everything we see, and pride in our achievements and possessions. These are not from the Father, but are from this world." So this is what happens. Like, if you ask most people, if you're doing these things, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, most people would say that you're winning. And God says that you're not just losing, like, you're losing bad. Like, you are so far off the mark. So let's break this down. What does that mean? Because those are kind of unique phrases that we're not terribly familiar with. And what's interesting about this, if you go back to the creation story, the exact same three issues are the issues that they contended with. If you go to the temptation of Jesus, where it says that Jesus was tempted by, you know, he went off and he fasted, he was in the wilderness, these are the exact three temptations that he dealt with. It says that, you know, turn this stone into bread. And Jesus said, you shouldn't live by bread alone, by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God, right? And so that was the lust of the flesh. It was the physical appetites that we all have. We all have physical appetites, not just in the sense that we desire food, but we have to, y'all know what we do. This is what, and we use these words. I'm sorry, I'm kind of like, I'm in it to win it, but I'm finna lose it, right? So what we do with things in Christianity is we try to justify everything. So then we throw out words like moderation. Now, let me be honest with you. There are things that we should enjoy in moderation. Food is one of those. It's a personal struggle. It just is. But here's the thing. When you start to understand what he's talking about here, that the lust of the flesh is that you have to have it. It is an inordinate desire, an unnatural desire. It is something that you cannot control and you cannot quench. It is insatiable. It's something that dominates thoughts. It's something that dominates your life, your schedule even. And so food is something that it's easy for us to understand. If you have, it's funny because in the Bible we call things sin, and now we just call them like an issue. Like, you know, we have a food issue, and in the Bible it was like, no, you have sin issue, right? But we don't like to do that because this is a participation trophy generation, right? Nobody in this church, other churches around the world, every other church around the world. And I'm just kidding. Golly. I have to apologize for being insensitive to the participation trophy generation. I'm kidding. I'm stop. All right, so food, we understand how the lust of the flesh is there, but let's look at some of the other things that would be considered the lust of the flesh. Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you, right? Again, moderation, or let me kind of set that one. Let me set the record straight here. Sex is a good thing. Sex is something that God created. God designed it specifically, right, uniquely for us to experience and enjoy at the right time, in the right moment, with the right people. The right thing at the wrong time is still the wrong thing. The right thing at the wrong time is still the wrong thing. And so what we've done as a society with sex is it is the lust of the flesh. And so even in advertising and marketing, what is the MO? Sex sells, right? We are marketed to death with sexual innuendo and sexual context and all of these things that would cause us to continue to pursue the lust of the flesh. And if you're winning like that, you're not winning with God. I've heard Christian people try to justify pornography. I'm like, first off, really? Like, really? You want to have this conversation? Oh, well, it's art. You know what I consider? Y'all have heard this, right? Let me tell you what I consider art. I consider art me and these beautiful knuckles smashing your temple. Hear me out. It's like the Mona Lisa, right? I am Michelangelo. My tools of artistic demonstration, let them work. If you think that's art, well, then I think fighting is art, and I should punch you in the temple. But I don't do that, right? Because right is right and wrong is wrong. Are y'all with me on that? Is anybody? I know Shelly's with me. If you think that porn is anything but filth, you need to check your heart because you're losing. You are losing. You're winning at the wrong things. You are not winning in your relationship with God. It is disgusting. It is filthy. And again, if like you are of this belief or whatever that, it's God created this stuff, then you need to look at the facts. And the facts are the underbelly, the way that all of this industry actually works is disgusting. It is disgusting. Let's talk about sex slavery. You want to talk about that? Right? Let's talk about the things that by being a participant in stuff like this, we are actually condoning the slavery of 13, 14, 15-year-old girls who are forced into prostitution so that you can experience your art. Don't come at me with that crap. Don't come at me with that crap. You don't want the smoke, right? You don't want it. That's just, it's stupid. It is stupid. And then you have it's adults. They're consenting. They're doing, they have the right to do that. You've heard these arguments, right? Then tell me why so many of them are on drugs just so that they can sustain the stupid lifestyle that they've gotten themselves caught up in, right? I bet if you were in an honest moment, you could get them to talk to you. They want out, but they're so deep in it, they can't get out, right? It's disgusting, but this is what happens when the lust of the flesh takes over. Like, it's never enough. It is never enough. And so we've just got to be aware that the lust of the flesh is at work. And if you're winning in that regard, you're actually losing in your relationship with Jesus. It's a good thing you guys aren't sensitive, right? The lust of the eyes, the next one. So you've got kind of your physical appetites. And then you also have your mental appetites. which I think are equally as dangerous. In fact, the word that's used here for eye is actually one of the references is to the mind's eye, like the way that you see and perceive the world. And so what happens is you have this, again, a lust is an inordinate, like unbalanced desire, and you have it for everything that you see. And then so this can go, kind of manifest itself in so many different ways, like jealousy, for example, like the way that other people look, the way that they are. We're jealous of their capabilities. We're jealous of their talents. We're jealous of their accomplishments. We're jealous of their possessions. We're jealous of everything about them. And this would never, ever, ever happen in the Instagram world. And we would never be on the contributing side to the lust of the eyes by only posting our highlights so that we give a false representation to the world of what our life is about, creating jealousy in them. We would never, ever, ever do that, would we? Right? The lust of the eyes is this. It usually, the way that it typically manifests itself is in kind of this materialism, right? Like that we are consumers to the max. Does God want to take care of us? 100%. Jesus is like, hey, look at the birds of the air. They just, you know, they just fly around and they just, oh, right, and do whatever they do. And I love them and I take care of them. And if I take care of them, I'm also going to take care of you. And look at the flowers of the fields. They're so beautiful and they're clothed. And I'm also going to take care of you. And so Jesus wants to provide for us. But what we do is then we pervert that so that we have everything we want. Everything. We just And here's the issue. It's not necessarily in the accumulation. It's in the mindset, right? That you become so singularly focused on consumption that you forget about everything else and everyone else. Here's how to know if you have a potential issue with this particular problem. That's a lot of P's and we just made it happen, right? If you have no issue with the idea of purchasing an exorbitant object for yourself, but you are appalled at the idea of being generous towards God, the church, or other people, then you have a lust of the eyes problem. If you're like, oh man, that truck's only $80,000. $20 to the church, are you freaking kidding me? And y'all, I mean, listen, y'all laugh, but I can give you names. I've got faces in my mind's eye right now. And stop. That's a problem. That is a problem. That is you think you're winning because you're consuming. You think you're winning because you're impressing other people. You think you're winning because you can look at your life and you can see all of the things that you've accumulated. You are losing because all of the stuff that you accumulate, tell me how that makes you feel when all that stuff starts to break down and wear out and it loses all of its value. Then what are you going to do? Right? So then what are you going to do? Let me ask you a question. Does your truck hug you back? I mean, sometimes the seat feels really good. It's like, man, it just... But does the stuff hug us back? Does the stuff love us back? The stuff, it is inanimate, right? We love people and use things. We use things and love people. But if you have the lust of the eyes, then you use people to get the things that you want, and you love the things more than you actually love people. And that's a problem. That is losing in terms of our relationship with God. That's winning at the wrong things. The last one is this. It's the pride of life. I was thinking about, if you were here last week was very interesting. I don't know if you were here or not. And if you were, it was different. I would apologize, but I'm not. I won't do that. I said a cuss word out of context. Out of context. I don't know if that's a cuss word or not by you. I don't really talk like that, but I was in a moment, right? And it was just one of those things that happened, and I said, hell, out of context, if that offends you, I am so sorry. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Hey, y'all listen to this. Y'all listen to this. She knows. Listen, if I have to quickly assemble a posse because something fitting to go down, you're on my team. Like some people, this is what happens. When you're in a situation, you find out who's about you, right? You find out the ones that like tuck tail and take off, gone somewhere, man. I don't need you in my life. But the ones that are like taking their shirts off because they're ready to, y'all know what I'm talking about? Like I've had friends in my life, like not even fixing to be an altercation, but you can just tell, hey, what'd you say? And they're like with you. Like not, y'all know what I'm talking about? Those are the kind of people that I want in my life. Those are the kind of people that I think that God uses to remind us how much he loves us, right? He is with us. He is for us. And when we have other people who are with us and they're for us, it's a reminder. Y'all know what I'm... Okay. So anyway, I was at the gym this week, and a lady who does not come to our church, she's been once or twice. She goes to another church. She's involved there. And we don't try to steal sheeple, right? We want people... Sheeple, right? Sheep from other churches. Like, if you go to another church, stay plugged in at your church. Unless your church sucks, then come over here. That's great. So she's very plugged in at another church, but apparently she watches. She's cheating on her church. She watches some of our stuff online. And so I saw her at the gym, and she came up, and she said, "Hey, Chris, what the hell?" And I was like, "I guess you watched the video? My bad." So last week was interesting, and this is my conclusion. We talked about some of the issues going on in the world, the racism that we deal with, and what I said was, I don't think that we have a skin issue, we have a sin issue. And anytime that there is racism and classism and elitism, ultimately all of those things come back to pride. It's the pride of life. You think because of this, that, or the other that you are better than someone else. And if you are winning in that regard, you are losing with Jesus. Like, he ain't about that, right? Jesus said so many different things. He was like, hey, anybody that calls somebody a fool, now, not in the way that we say fool, but fool as in you are worthless, you have no value, I'm better than you. Jesus said, you better watch out. Watch out. That's exactly what he said, not really, verbatim. And then he talks about, he said, anybody who says Raza to someone else, who essentially says, because of your ethnicity, you have no value, you better watch out. Not really, but you understand what I'm saying, right? That's what this is how he views everything. Don't ever think that you're superior to anyone, because what you will soon find out is there is somebody else who is superior to you, and they will put you in your place. He tells so many stories about this, about coming into a party, and you see the seat at the head of the table. And what we tend to do, we're like, that's a good seat. I think I'm going to mosey my happy self on over to that good seat. Because y'all know if you get the good seat, you get the best service. You probably get the first crack at the food, which, again, is a problem for me. And he tells a story about people who go and they put themselves in the place of honor. The host of the party is going to come in and be like, hey, that seat ain't for you. You need to go sit at the end of the table. That seat's reserved for somebody else. If we exalt ourselves, he'll humble us. But if we humble ourselves, then he'll exalt us. So this whole pride thing, this is what it essentially comes back to. You think that this is all about you. You think that life is about you, that the sun revolves around you, that all of, and what's worse than that, you think that everything that you've accomplished and everything that you've done and all that you can do is a result of your capabilities or your awesomeness or your this or your that. That is a recipe for disaster. You may be winning in the fact that you think you've got all of this stuff figured out and you've got it all together, but you are actually losing, because what you've done is you've created a scenario where you're God. And then what are you going to do when you can't do it? What are you going to do when you can't do what you can't do? Because you'll find things in life, you'll find situations in life that are just beyond your capabilities. And then who do you turn to since you've got this whole thing figured out? So that's not how he wants us to live our life. You think that you're in complete control, but you're not, right? We relinquish control to the one who is greater. And so if you struggle with the pride of life, we celebrate this in society. We celebrate arrogance. We celebrate ostentatiousness. We celebrate pompousness, right? People who have this brash and bravado, and we're like, yeah, you know, they just seem so sure of themselves and they're so confident. We celebrate those sorts of things. And if you're winning in that regard, you may be losing in your relationship with Jesus. So winning is actually losing. Was that all pretty straightforward and understandable and simple? This is the last point, and we'll be quick here. Is if winning is losing, then losing must be winning, right? What does that even mean? Like, what does it mean to lose our lives so that we can find it? And I think the answer is way simpler than we try to make it sometimes. We try to make Christianity like so much more. I mean, don't get me wrong, there are layers to it. There is an infinite amount of wisdom, things that we'll never learn even after a lifetime of pursuit of wisdom and knowledge. There's always more to learn. But the basics are really simple. And this is what it means to lose your life so that you can find it. It's just to follow Jesus. Isn't that what he said in the verse before? He's like, hey, take up your cross every day and follow me. just follow me. And when you follow him, what you find is that, yeah, maybe you're losing some of the things that you think matter, but what you're gaining is always greater than what you're losing. What you gain is always greater than what you lose. What this means is that there are going to be times in your life where you don't fit in. There are going to be times in your life where people who are close to you, who really care about you, they're going to be concerned for you. Because, you know, you're losing in a different standard, right? But you're following Jesus, and so that is winning. You're not always going to fit in. It's not a popularity contest. Like, junior high is over, homie. Well, for most of us, if you got any junior highs, cool. Right? That is junior high was like the worst stage in life. Y'all know do y'all ever look back at junior high pictures? God help us all. Because we thought we were winning. We were losing. What a perfect example, right? And so it's not a popularity contest. And Paul even talks about this. He's like, hey, if I were actually trying to please people, I'm losing, but I'm here to please God, and that's what winning is all about. So it's not necessarily fitting in all of the time. It's not necessarily following the crowds and the way that everybody else lives their life. It's not necessarily fitting into the pattern of this world. Like, the way that the world works may not be the way that your life works, and so you may be losing in that regard, but if you're losing, you might be winning. It may look like losing to some, but again, winning, if you're unfamiliar with the rules of the game, if you make a basket in a wrong basket, you're losing. But if you make a basket in the right basket, you're winning. The world thinks that they've got the backward, they've got it all wrong. They've got the baskets wrong. They keep making all these shots. They keep making buckets, right? They got layups and slam dunks and threes and just bucket after bucket after bucket. But they're making it in the wrong goal. They're making all of these shots in the wrong goal. And we make a few shots here and there in the right goal, and we're criticized for it, and we're ostracized for it. Keep shooting shots in the right shot, right? Keep shooting at the right goal. Doesn't matter what everybody else says. You do what you know God wants you to do, what you were called to do. Follow the path that he has for you. So losing is actually winning. Let me give you some examples of that. That means sometimes you don't get to respond how you want to respond. And it feels like losing, because in that moment, you have so many things to say, so many things that you want to do. Y'all know what I'm talking about? And so you lose your right to respond, but what you're actually doing is winning influence. You're winning people to the idea that God could forgive them because you forgive them. You may be losing your right to respond or your right to react, but you are actually winning an opportunity to influence somebody, to point them to Jesus. You may lose your right for revenge, and you gain the right to retribution and opportunity to make a difference in their life, right? We sacrifice things that we think mean so much more than they actually do. The things that we are giving up are never as significant or as important as the things that we're taking on, right? So it's not necessarily we're laying down our response or our preferred response. You may lose some arguments, but you gain some influence. It's making peace when you want to turn the place upside down. Listen, any parents, y'all know what I'm talking about? What an example to our kids when we lose our right to be furious and we show them grace and we demonstrate that to them in place of. Right? It may feel like losing, but losing is actually winning. It's forgiving when you want vengeance. It's loving the people that you encounter every single day, even when they don't agree with you. They don't look like you. They don't come from the same context that you come from, the same background that you come from. You have different ideologies. They may not believe like you believe. That's fine. It is loving them anyway. And that's what winning is. It may feel like losing because this is what we celebrate in our society. We celebrate who is the quickest to make a statement and who is the loudest in making their statement. Like, that's the world that we live in, unfortunately. Why don't we just love people instead of trying to make a statement? Instead of making a point, why don't we try to make a difference? Instead of making a point, why don't we try to make a difference? You can win and make a point, or you can lose and make a difference. Tell me which of those matters in the end, making a difference. Let's be losers, right? Let's be losers in the right sense of the world, that when we find our life, we lose it, but when we lose our life for Jesus' sake, we're actually finding it. He has so much in store for us. He has so much purpose for us and so many things that he wants to use us to do, but it doesn't happen unless we're willing to give up some of the things that we want. Let's be losers. Amen. Amen. Let me pray for us. Father, thank you so much for all that you do. God, thank you for your love. God, your incredible love. It is so much more than we can comprehend, understand, or ever deserve. And we're so thankful for it. God, we're so thankful, God, that you've demonstrated to us and for us what a life pursuing the right things is about. God, that maybe you lost in the sense that people thought you should have done this or should have done that, and you gave up those rights and those freedoms, but what you gained was so much more than what you lost. God, help us to take on that same mentality. And God, I know this looks a little different for all of us, whatever it is that you have right in front of us that we need to give up so that we can win, or we need to lay down so that we can gain something in place of. God, I pray that you would help us to do that. Help us to follow you, to be obedient, and to love you, Jesus. Help us to make a difference in the community that we live in, to be light that shines in the darkness. And it's in Jesus' incredible name we pray, and everybody said, amen.